In our study tonight, we're studying from the 24th chapter of the book of 2 Samuel. On the board, I've got 2 Samuel 18. Just ignore that. Turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 24. 2 Samuel chapter 24. We're talking about some of the problems that existed in King David's life, many of which he was the cause of. We've noted his sin with Bathsheba and the consequences that were imposed as a result of that, that war would be involved in his kingship from that day forward. Much of the turmoil would be in his own family. We've talked about how that Amnon raped Tamar, his sister, David's children now, and then how that Absalom, another son, killed Amnon as a result. And then we talked about how Absalom tried to take the kingdom away from his father in what we might refer to as a coup, and the problems involved with that and how that Absalom was ultimately killed. But that was not the end of David's trouble. It seems like it just continued to go on and on and on. We notice as David grows older, it was his desire to number the military might of his kingdom, and Joab, his captain, we talked about this Sunday morning, objected to that, and we saw then how David's will gained victory. They began to number the people, and as a result, there were consequences. We talked about how that it appears David's expressed will is to depend upon himself. There appears to be arrogancy on his part, pride on his part, a lack of faith and confidence and trust in God. We've already established that, how that God's victory, the Israelite victory, was not dependent upon their numbers, but rather was dependent upon God fighting for them. And, of course, that then meant their faithfulness and dependence upon God. But because David numbered the people, there were consequences to be imposed. In verse 13, Gad, the seer or the prophet, came to David and told him that you have a choice to make, 7 years of famine to come in the land, or there will be 3 months fleeing before your enemies, or there will be 3 days pestilence in the land. And David's desire was that he would be in the hands of God rather than in the hands of men, that he might find mercy there. And we saw that 3 days pestilence resulted in 70,000 of the people of God dying. Now, we talked about strength of what one angel can do. And we noted the contrast how that Jesus commanded 12 legions of angels when he was arrested and brought before Pilate. But we note that at the conclusion of the 70,000 people dying, in verse 18 now of 2 Samuel chapter 24, it says, "And Gad came that day to David and said unto him, Rear an altar unto Jehovah in the threshing floor of Arona, the Jebusite. And David went up according to the saying of Gad, as Jehovah commanded. And Arona looked forth and saw the king and his servants coming on toward him. And Arona went out and bowed himself before the king and his face to the ground." Now, Arona is asking the king, in essence, "Why have you come to me?" And how does David explain his presence? "Come to buy the threshing floor." Now, perhaps it's a moot point at this point in our study, but you know what a threshing floor is. What was done there?
Threshing.
I knew somebody else. Can you be a wee bit more specific? What was the purpose of the threshing floor? What took place there? Threshing. Besides that, how do they do that? Lauren? Okay, go ahead. Yes, that's where they separate the wheat from the chaff. And how did they do that? There was a process. All right, they'd take forks and throw it up in the air. Of course, the wind then would blow away the chaff, and the wheat would fall over here, and that's how they would separate that. So you needed a nice, smooth place where you could preserve the wheat, thus the threshing floor. And David came to buy that. Well, Arona's attitude was, "I'll just give it to you. And here's the oxen, and you can use the equipment that has been used behind the oxen
to build your fire, and all will be well. And what was David's response to that? Why not? Can't do that. Why not? Would be a sacrifice. I can't offer to the Lord that which costs me nothing. He said, I'll buy it from you. And he paid him 50 shekels of silver, the text tells us, in verse 24. And in verse 25, David built there an altar unto Jehovah and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So Jehovah was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel. So David bought the threshing floor. There's a lot of lessons involved in that when we consider David's statement there in verse 24 that I will buy it at a price, neither will I offer burnt offerings unto Jehovah my God, which cost me nothing. David?
It makes me think about going back to Sunday night when I talked about Cain and Abel. Cain could have bought.
Sure he could.
Bought an animal from
Abel. God didn't require something that was impossible. He could have met the instructions of the Lord, yes. But sometimes we reason likewise. We want to offer the very least that we can, that which is very convenient for us, so we don't want to make any sacrifices on our part in order to serve the Lord. Well, that won't work. David recognized that in the context of these verses. Now, if you're comparing the accounts, when you turn over to the Chronicles, 1 Chronicles chapter 21, you won't find the name Arona, but you'll find the name Ornan, O-R-N-A-N, in that account. Now, some think, well, when we get to the portion of the kings, it gets real confusing because some of the men are called by different names. That's true, but don't be lost. Just understand when you compare the accounts, read what the man does and who he is. And you'll see then that it may be a different name by which he's called, but nonetheless, it's the same person recording the very same events. Now, we're going to talk about some complications of that as we get a little bit further along, but we don't have one here. So just make note of that. Now, when we read further into 2 Samuel, we've talked about this before. We'll just make this point in passing. The songs of praise, the psalms that we have discussed Sunday morning in 2 Samuel chapter 22, where we note numerous praises given by David unto God for all the great things that God has done for him, the great occasions of deliverance. And then in 2 Samuel 23, we commented on that briefly in the lesson Sunday morning, as well as David said in verse 5, Verily my house is not so with God, yet he hath made with me an everlasting covenant. We talked about that in relation to 2 Samuel 7. How that the lineage would come from David. Of course, we saw that beginning, actually, in Genesis 49, verse 10, where the scepter would not depart out of the hand of Judah. And we've got a lineage now through the tribe of Judah, down through David, that culminates, if you read the genealogy of Matthew and Luke, that culminates in the coming of Jesus. And so here's the promise from 2 Samuel chapter 7, regarding the establishment of the throne of David and the covenant that God made with David that's referred to as an everlasting covenant. And we talked about the mighty men. And there's the parallel account, so we won't spend time again on that. But here's where I want to talk with you for a few moments in our study tonight about the preparations that David made for the building of the temple. The account in 2 Samuel does not give us these details. That's why it's important, I think, to compare the accounts. Turn, if you will, to the Chronicles in 1 Chronicles chapter 22. 1 Chronicles chapter 22. In 1 Chronicles chapter 22, you'll begin the reading there at verse 2. The text tells us that David commanded to gather together the sojourners that were in the land of Israel, and he set masons to hew wrought stones to build the house of God. And David prepared iron in abundance for the nails, for the doors of the gates, and for the couplings, and brass in abundance without weight, and cedar trees without number. For the Sidonians and they of Tyre brought cedar trees in abundance to David. And David said, Solomon my son is young and tender, and the house that is to be builded for Jehovah must be exceeding magnificent, of fame and of glory throughout all countries I will therefore make preparation for it. So David prepared abundantly before his death. That's significant. How many of you had thought about the source of the materials that Solomon used to build the temple? In my study, in times gone by, I know at least in part, I thought that a lot of this just originated with Solomon. But no, that's not true. David made preparation in great abundance long before he died, so that Solomon would have the materials necessary for the building of the temple. In fact, you'll notice beginning in verse 6 through verse 13 of this text that David remarks that God had said that he had shed too much blood, that he would not be privileged to build the temple. But in fact, his son Solomon, that would be born into him, would build the temple, a house for my name, verse 10. And he shall be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever over Israel. Now, if you'll note in verse 14 of this text, it says, "Now behold, in my affliction I have prepared for the house of Jehovah 100,000 talents of gold, and 1,000 talents of silver, and of brass and iron without weight, for it is in abundance. Timber also and stone have I prepared, and thou mayest add thereto. Moreover, there are workmen with thee in abundance, hewers and workers of stone and timber, and all men that are skillful in every manner of work, of the gold, the silver, and the brass, and the iron. There is no number. Arise and be doing, and Jehovah be with thee." So David, in speaking with his son Solomon, says, look, I've got these materials to gather. These are the necessary elements that you will use in the building of the temple. So he makes preparation for that. Now, another thing that was necessary, if you're going to build the temple, there has to be those appointed who are to officiate. And that has to be right. And so you'll note that David then begins to organize the people in chapter 23. David is old, it tells us, and full of days. And he made Solomon, his son, king over Israel. Now what did he do? He gathered together the Levites and began to make preparation for those who would serve in the priestly capacity. Now it's noteworthy just here that we note that all priests, of course, had to be Levites. But not everybody that was a Levite was a priest. So in order to be a priest, one had to be of the tribe of Levi, of the branch of Kohath, and of the particular family of Aaron. Now, even more specific was the position of the high priest. Now, in David's preparation for all of this to take place, he had to make such appointments and organize these people. You'll note that he went even further in his organizational procedures to divide the Levites into their separate families. In this text, you'll notice the family of the descendants of Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, the sons of Levi. He's getting everything in order so that the proper individuals can officiate in their service in the temple service. Now, of course, from the time of Aaron until the current time of David, a lot of years have passed. And there are many descendants of Aaron who were qualified to be priests. In fact, in David's day, there were two men serving as high priests. Can you tell me who they were? We've talked about their names. Two men serving as high priests. Zadok and Abiathar. Yes, Zadok and Abiathar. Now note, if you will, that Aaron had four sons. Can you tell me the names of two of them? Nadab and Abihu, yes. Eleazar and Ithamar, that's right. Now Nadab and Abihu, we know what happened to them back over in Leviticus chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. And how that God sent fire from heaven and consumed them. Then that leaves the descent of Eleazar and Ithamar. So all the priests then, by David's time, were of this lineage, Ithamar or Eleazar. Now, Zadok was of the family of Eleazar, and Abiathar was of the family of Ithamar. Now, through most of the Israelite history, as you recall, there was only one high priest who served until he died, and then another high priest took his place, served until he died. And under that high priest, there were 24 courses of priests that took their turns in serving in the temple. They came in for their turn and then returned to their home. The other Levites were divided into courses so that they took their turns in their various assigned jobs with the temple. But when we see what has happened here at this particular point in time, we notice that there is a problem with the lineage, and frankly, I'm not exactly sure what happened or when it happened. But to get this thing set back on course, where there is one priest that is of the direct lineage of Eleazar instead of Abiathar. That was the direct lineage of the priestly line. Somehow, and again, I don't know how, we find priests serving from Abiathar. But David gets that thing set right where the lineage then proceeds through Eleazar. So we've got a true lineage from Aaron through the tribe of Levi that serves as the priest. And we can talk about that. There was a hitch in the get-along.
Well, what's the problem with Abiathar? I thought you said he was of the lineage of Eleazar or Ithamar.
Let me look at the notes. Get the details. The priesthood, the high priesthood, usually passed to the oldest son. And as I recall, Eleazar was older than Ithamar. And so the high priesthood needed to come through Eleazar instead of Ithamar. But somehow there were priests that were serving of the lineage of Ithamar. And so David gets that thing set right. The details of that just simply aren't given in Scripture. So I don't know. All I know is that Eleazar was the proper one to serve because of his age. Yes?
My memory's not as good as it was.
I understand.
I believe Eleazar was the one, when they were talking about adultery in the camp, and one of the Jews brought in a woman who was committing adultery, that he ran over there and drove a spike or a sword or something.
I believe that's right.
Both of them.
Yeah, I believe that's right. Poked it through both of them. Yeah, I believe that's right. So there was an element, and I had a note on that if I could find it readily. I thought I had it marked in my notes. I don't see it readily. I'll run across it a bit later, perhaps. But be that as it may, that was the issue. Who was the oldest had the rights of being high priest.
But just to clarify, only the sons of Aaron could be high priests, but the sons of Levi were priests.
Yes. I believe that's right. I believe that's right. Well, I thought I could run across that readily. Seems like sometimes the harder I look for something that I am not seeing, the farther away it gets, but be that as it may. Anyway, that was the problem, Richard, the age of the
yeah, if you look at Numbers 3:32, it says, and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest. And now Eleazar is the third son of Aaron, the priest
right.
being the fourth.
Okay.
Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, shall be prince of the princes of the Levites and have the oversight of them to keep the charge of the sanctuary.
There you are. That's the passage then. That's the passage. Very good. Thank you. As we look further in this text of organizing the people, get back on my chart here, Chapter 24. That's where this is discussed. You'll see that verses 1, 2, and 3. And then verse 4, there were more chief men found of the sons of Eleazar than the sons of Ithamar. And thus were they divided. So he's divided that and set that right. in verse, the latter part of verse 6, that's not specifically what I was looking for. What you have is what I was looking for. But the other sons of Levi are stipulated throughout the 24th chapter. I'm not going to go through and try to pronounce or read all those names for obvious purposes, but that's the context of chapter 24. When you get to chapter 25, you see then the organization of the songs, the service of song. And you see another laundry list of names and the various orders that are given. And then when you come to the 26th chapter, the identifying of the doorkeepers of the temple. Yes?
Just a clarification. In Numbers 25:7, it's Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, that ran the two through the Spirit.
Oh, Phinehas. Okay. Okay. There you go, Lauren. The son of Eleazar. Okay.
Numbers 25:7.
All right. Chapter 26 deals with the courses of the doorkeepers, the naming of these characters. Then beginning in verse 20, David stipulated the keepers of the treasures of the house of God. And then when you come to chapter 27, David has organized the people and dictated who the civil officials would be. Chapter 27, beginning in verse 15, we see the identifying of the various captains in his army, and then the captains of the tribes, chapter 27, beginning in verse 16. And then I've asked you to note the numbering in verses 23. If you'll drop down into that, verse 23, David took not the number of them from 20 years old and under, because Jehovah had said he would increase Israel like the stars of heaven. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, began to number, but finished not. And there came wrath for this upon Israel. Neither was the number put into the account in the Chronicles of King David. Again, we've talked some about that. But in chapter 27, verse 25, we see that David appoints certain characters to be over the king's treasures. And you see their various stipulation. I thought the detail of this was rather fascinating. You'll notice that certain ones were to be in charge of the vineyards, certain ones to be in charge of the olive trees, others of the lowlands, the cellars of oil, the herds, the camels, the asses, the flocks. I mean, he's got it very fine-tuned as to who is to oversee what. And then as you conclude that chapter with verse 32 through verse 34, you'll notice the names of certain counselors are given. And then when you begin chapter 28, David assembles the people and he begins to tell the people what they are to do, the instruction. Now keep in mind, David is a very old man at this point, and he's giving instruction of the plans to build the temple. Now, pick up the reading, if you will, in chapter 28, beginning in verse 3. Again, David, speaking to the assembly of the people, says, "But God said unto me, Thou shalt not build a house for my name, because thou art a man of war and hast shed blood. Howbeit, Jehovah, the God of Israel, chose me out of all the house of my father to be king over Israel forever. For he hath chosen Judah to be prince. And in the house of Judah, the house of my father, and among the sons of my father, he took pleasure in me to make me king over all Israel. And all of my sons, for Jehovah hath given me many sons, he hath chosen Solomon." Underscore that. "God has chosen Solomon, my son, to sit upon the throne of the kingdom of Jehovah over Israel. And he said unto me, Solomon, thy son, he shall build my house and my courts, for I have chosen him to be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish his kingdom forever, if he be constant to do my commandments and my ordinances as at this day," etc., etc. I want to pause just there. We know that David is well aware of who's to be king. Now, the reason that's important is there's a controversy about that as we begin 1 Kings chapter 1 as to who is to be king. David's son Adonijah thinks he's supposed to be king instead of Solomon, and that creates a problem. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But in verse 9 of chapter 28, David says, "And thou, Solomon, my son, know thou the God of thy father, and serve him with a perfect heart and with a willing mind. For God searcheth all hearts and understandeth all the imaginations of the thoughts. If thou seek him, he will be found of thee. But if thou forsake him, he will cast thee off forever. Take heed now, for Jehovah hath chosen thee to build a house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it." Notice the warning given by David to Solomon. David knows, doesn't he? He has reason to know. Lauren, question?
No, I was just thinking about when God tells him to do something, when he gave all the fine details of the tabernacle, he didn't say, no, just assign it to anybody. But was he not put his spirit in those people who were the craftsmen? I think that says that. I was trying to look for it, but I think it's in Exodus 31 where it lists each craftsman and how they were supposed to do it. God gave him that knowledge.
All right. Very, very detailed.
Very detailed.
In our study of the book of Ezekiel, we've noted, again, great details given regarding the temple that Ezekiel saw and described. And so, this that is given to David is with extreme detail. In fact, in verse 11, it says, "Then David gave to Solomon his son the pattern of the porch of the temple, and the houses thereof, and of the treasuries thereof, and of the upper rooms thereof, and the inner chambers thereof, and the place of the mercy seat, and the pattern of all that he had by the Spirit, for the courts of the house of Jehovah, and for all the chambers round about, for the treasuries of the house of God, and for the treasuries of the dedicated things, also for the courses of the priests and the Levites, and for all the work of the service of the house of Jehovah, and for all the vessels of service in the house of Jehovah." And as you continue reading through this paragraph, you'll notice infinite detail right down to the lamps. Everything specifically detailed. That's right.
So when that gets up, somebody mentioned it earlier, that God does not hold us accountable for something we cannot do.
That's right.
So anything He asks or requires of us, we have that ability.
We have the ability to do it. That's right. He doesn't ask the impossible. On that particular note, Lauren, when we come over into the New Testament and read of the collection for the needy saints in Jerusalem, as Paul addresses that in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. Just an interesting observation in light of what you said. In verse 12 of chapter 8, he says, "For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according as a man hath, not according as he hath not." God doesn't require anything of anybody that they can't do. And so these specific requirements of these individuals, yes, they had the ability to do that. And God knew that. And there it is. And I think that's important. We need to see that. Do you see the providence of God at all working in this, do you? That gets to be rather an exciting subject to study, doesn't it? All right, look further, if you will, back over in chapter 28 of 1 Chronicles. And observe verse 19. Verse 19, "All this, said David, have I been made to understand in writing from the hand of Jehovah, even all the works of this pattern." Now, when Moses was instructed on the mount to build the tabernacle, did God tell him how to build it? Right down to infinite details. When we come over into the New Testament, when the Hebrew writer makes mention of the building of the tabernacle, he points that out. "For see, saith he, that thou build all things according to the pattern showed thee in the mount." When it comes to the building of the temple, who gave the pattern? God did, through David. Very detailed pattern. But now, of course, we know when we come to the work and worship of the church that there is no pattern, right? Yes, there is. Yes, there is. But there are those who say when it comes to the work and worship of the church, there really isn't a pattern. But there is a pattern. There was a pattern regarding the building of the tabernacle. There was a pattern regarding the building of the temple. And what did the tabernacle and the temple become a type of? Pardon me? The church. Isn't that interesting? God was very particular about how the tabernacle was to be built, how the temple was to be built. These things foreshadowed the church, but the church could just be built anyway. There is no pattern. Yes. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, our point then, I think you see, when we come a little further down in the text, chapter 28, verse 20, David said to Solomon his son, "Be strong and of good courage and do it. Fear not, nor be dismayed, for Jehovah God, even my God, is with thee, for he will not fail thee, nor forsake thee, until all the work of the service of the house of Jehovah be finished." Does that sound familiar? He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. We've talked about that many times. You'll find it in Hebrews chapter 13. If memory serves me correctly, it's about verse 5. Hebrews chapter 13, about verse 5. "I will never fail you. Neither will I in any wise forsake thee." And of course, this is what Solomon is being told. You can do this. Verse 21, "And behold, there are the courses of the priest and the Levites for all the service of the house of God. And there shall be with thee in all manner of work every willing man that hath skill or for any manner of service. Also the captains and all the people will be holy at thy commandment." Solomon, you can do this. What about the laborers? As you pointed out, Lauren, they're skilled. They can do this. You can do this. But be faithful to God in the accomplishment of this. Now, this was his speech given to the people. This was his speech given to Solomon. And this was the assurances that were given to Solomon that this can be done. Now, of course, it was a great task, and it would take a long time to complete, but it could be done. All right. When we look at the provisions that David has laid up, we've already mentioned that briefly, but if you'll go to the 29th chapter, you'll note that this that is to be built is not for man, but it's for God, verse 1. Solomon says, "Now," or David says, "Now I have prepared with all my might for the house of my God, the gold for the things of gold, the silver for the things of silver, the brass for the things of brass, the iron for the things of iron, the wood for the things of wood, onyx stones, etc., etc., precious stones," in verse 2. He says, "Moreover, also, because I have set my affection on the house of my God, seeing that I have a treasure of mine own of gold and silver, I give it to the house of my God, over and above all that I have prepared for the holy house." Explain that for me. David wanted to build the house of God. So he makes preparation with all these supplies to do so, knowing that he'll not be privileged to do it. But not all of David's resources are devoted to the house of God. David has personal resources. And he tells us here that I have given enormous supply of my own personal resources to build the house of God. Why does he tell them that? What's he want them to do? The people. To do the same thing. That's right, to give also. When you pick it up there at verse 6, it says, "Then the princes of the fathers' houses and the princes of the tribes of Israel and the captains of the houses and of hundreds with the rulers over the king's work offered willingly. And they gave for the service of the house of God of gold 5,000 talents." Do you not see that in this text, David sets the precedent. He sets the example. Here's what I did. And then we've got these in positions of authority following David's example. What do you suppose those over whom they have authority, what then do they do? Same thing. So we've got the people willingly offering of their own personal resources those things necessary to build the house. Now in verse 10, It says, "Wherefore David blessed Jehovah before all the assembly, and David said, Blessed be thou, O Jehovah, the God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Thine, O Jehovah, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heavens and in the earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Jehovah, and thou art exalted as head above all." Now, when David is giving such praise and thankfulness for the greatness of God, and as he has mentioned those things that he has collected for the building of the house of God, and those things that he, of his own personal resources, has given for the building of the house of God, and now thankful for these things that the people have given, he identifies those things as having been God's to begin with. But, you see, the people could have acted selfishly, but they act willingly to give these things to the building of the temple. I'm going to pause just here, and I've been looking at my notes and looking at my Bible quite a little bit. If you've had your hand up, I may not have seen it. Any comment or question just here? David?
Is it also possible that by giving of their means that David did, that the building of the temple would mean that much more?
I didn't hear the last part.
Would mean that much more?
It should, yes. Anything you have a personal investment in, you'd like to think that you think a little highly, more highly of. Yeah. Now, when it comes time to build this, we're not just talking about their resources of gold and silver and iron and stone and so forth. We're talking about their labor as well. We'll see how many laborers Solomon puts together for the building of this.
And right now, I'm impressed by David because all the things that he had done, now he's taken all of his might and everything that he has to do what God wanted.
That's why he's a man after God's own heart. Yeah. I think what we see in this is genuine, very genuine. Thus, he's identified as in the New Testament as a man of after God's own heart in particular. Well, in verse 16 of the text, chapter 29, 1 Chronicles, David continues, "O Jehovah our God, all this store that we have prepared to build thee a house, for thy holy name cometh of thy hand, and is all thine own. And thou also, my God, I know also, my God, that thou triest the heart, and hast pleasure in uprightness. As for me, in the uprightness of my heart, I have willingly offered all these things. And now have I seen with joy thy people that are present here offer willingly unto thee. O Jehovah, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Israel, our fathers, keep this forever in the imagination of the thoughts of the heart of thy people, and prepare their heart unto thee. And give unto Solomon, my son, a perfect heart to keep thy commandments, thy testimonies, and thy statutes, and to do all these things, and to build a palace for which I have made provisions." David prays to God, stating the greatness of God, stating the blessings that God has bestowed upon him personally, upon these people. But he also prays that these people might remember the willingness with which they have given, and that Solomon might be faithful in carrying out the commandments, statutes, and testimonies of God in the building of this place. In verse 20 through verse 22, the text tells us then that the sacrifices are offered. Verse 21 in particular, "And they sacrificed sacrifices unto Jehovah, and offered burnt offerings unto Jehovah on the morrow after that day, even 1,000 bullocks, 1,000 rams, and 1,000 lambs, and their drink offerings and sacrifices in abundance for all Israel, and did eat and drink before Jehovah on that day with great gladness." Now I want to pause right there in the reading, because what we see after all of this giving of possessions, the animals being sacrificed, we see the gladness on behalf of the people to be able to do that. They're happy to do that. We're going to see later that that doesn't always, and it hasn't in the past, always characterized God's people. And that's going to be interesting to us, I think. In the next portion of chapter 29, we see that Solomon is made king. He sits on the throne of David, his father, and prospers, and all Israel obeyed him. We know that David reigned over Israel, verse 27 tells us, totally 40 years, 7 years in Hebron, and 33 years in Jerusalem, and he died in a good old age, full of days, riches, and honor, and Solomon his son reigned in his stead. Lots to be said about David. When you study about David, you can't help but be impressed. I had a note that I failed to notice regarding the princes and the nobles, the things that they brought to build the house of God. Someone did the conversions on this, and Jenny, this is a good project for anybody that likes math. This fellow says they gave 190 tons of gold. They gave 180 pounds of gold in coin, 375 tons of silver, 675 tons of bronze, 3,750 tons of iron, and the people rejoiced greatly as they gave willingly, and David also rejoiced. Yes.
David prays for Solomon. David was a wealthy man. Did he pray for wealth for his son? He didn't do that, did he? The things that would draw Solomon closer to God is what he prayed for.
Yeah.
And too often times people in this world forget where the treasure is at.
That's right. That's right. When David prayed for Solomon, he prayed that he might keep the commandments, that he might keep the testimonies, keep the statutes and ordinances. Wealth is not an issue. Keeping the commandments certainly was. Go ahead.
We notice that Job offered sacrifices for his own children. But in John 17, what does Jesus do? What's his prayer for unity in the church?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Excellent. Any other comment? Question? Anybody? Yes, Randy?
Do we know how old David was when he died?
No.
Full of days.
Full of days.
Older.
His ages. Interesting you would ask that. Pardon me?
Was he 43?
He reigned for 40 years. I don't recall how old he was when he started. If we knew that number, then we could say he was 80 when he died.
We don't know when he died immediately after Solomon became king.
I don't know how old he was when he died. Ripe old age. Okay. All right. Well, I want to make this observation, that David took over a kingdom. You recall what shape it was in when Saul died? What had happened during the reign of Saul? Well, the Philistines had encroached, and we find that certain areas up here to the north had been lost, and the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites, it seems that people are just coming in from every direction, and Saul is losing territory. And at the time that David became king, we're told that there was about 6,000 square miles of land over which he ruled. But by the time that David died, he left about 60,000 square miles for his son Solomon to rule. I want you to notice that he controlled the area back up to the river Euphrates, all the way down to the river of Egypt.
And all that included those three major highways.
Yes. Oh, yes. Because this land, that's what made it so volatile. Everybody wanted it.
Tributes coming and going.
Yes. Solomon not only had tribute coming from those who were traveling these travel paths, but or highways, but he also controlled to a great degree the seas and brought tribute from places across the Mediterranean. We'll talk about some of that when we get to the days of Solomon and discuss that in some detail. Now, if you'll turn back in your Bible, I don't know if I have enough time to even look at this, but if you'll turn back to 1 Kings, 1 Kings, chapter 1, 1 Kings, chapter 1. No, I don't want that. I want this one. First Kings chapter 1. These are the passages I want you to read between now and Sunday if you've not read them already. First Kings chapter 1 through 11, and the parallel account in the Chronicles, Second Chronicles chapter 1 through 9. Okay? You'll find that at the beginning of your lesson, lesson number 24, as we begin to talk about the reign of King Solomon. But in 1 Kings chapter 1, we will primarily be following the account in the Kings for a text. So if you want to read that account first, that would be desirable. It says, "Now King David was old, stricken in years, and they covered him with clothes, but he gat no heat. Wherefore his servants said unto him, Let there be sought for my lord, the king, a young virgin, and let her stand before the king and nourish him. And let her lie in thy bosom, that my lord the king may get heat. So they sought for a fair damsel throughout all the borders of Israel, and found Abishag, Shunammite, and brought her to the king. And the damsel was fair, and she cherished the king, and ministered to him, but the king knew her not." What was the real purpose of Abishag? Keep him warm. He's an old man freezing to death. And so they sought for this young lady to help keep him warm. And we're going to see why that was important when we talk about Adonijah and his attempt to take over the kingdom, even when he well understood that Solomon was to be king. But we see an effort on his part to do that with Abishag. We'll talk about that Sunday morning. Okay. Oh, by the way, in your lesson book, there is on page 95, lesson number 25. It's the review of the United Kingdom. That'll be a review over the reign of King Saul, King David, and King Solomon. I know it may seem that way, but we'll be there before you know it. So it's not too early to start working on that, get that completed. Okay, one of the things I like to do with a review is to review. That's not the time to fill in the questions, okay? You should have that done before then.